You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Wednesday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening, for subscribing, and to those who support us on Patreon. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here with David Ramil and cap expert and NBA insider Keith Smith. He's a contributor to Yahoo Sports and Real GM, as well as several other outlets. And he's here to help us break down everything that you need to know about where the Miami Heat stand ahead of February 7th's trade deadline. We'll talk about what the Heat need and some realistic options for them to fill those needs, and everything that you need to know as far as where the Heat stand with the deadline approaching. So a lot of information to download, but Keith is awesome at explaining some of the more complex salary cap issues. I think you're really going to enjoy this, especially if you like to geek out over this stuff and spend hours on the trade machine like I do. Anyways, let's get to it. And we're here now with Keith Smith. Keith, thanks for jumping on the show. We really appreciate it. We need someone to break all this stuff down because David and I, we've been talking about the trade deadline and things that the Heat could do as they approach the trade deadline. But this is going to be sort of a 101 for everybody listening as to where the Heat are and where they can go coming up to February 7th, and that being the trade deadline. So let's start with the salary cap breakdown. Right now, the Heat don't have any cap space. They're a little bit more than $6.2 million over the luxury tax. That's probably going to be a concern for them, right?
Yeah, I would imagine that is, it's tough to be a kind of middling team that's, fighting for a playoff spot and paying the luxury tax. It's just one of those things that, they don't go hand in hand. You're happy to do that if you're the Warriors and you're competing for titles. When you're fighting for the playoffs, that, that limits you. It also limits you in what you can do as far as using any of your exceptions or taking on money in trades, because unless it's going to be something that's really going to jump you up in the standings, you ideally really don't want to do that. And as things stand right now today, they're poised to be a luxury tax team again next year. So if you can do something to try and move some money and avoid that doesn't really hurt your season this year, that's probably what you're kind of looking at right now.
Can you explain the repeater tax situation for our listeners? And I know that's something that the Heat need to be thinking about.
Yeah, so the real kind of simple thing to know with the repeater tax is it's much more punitive. Basically, it starts jumping things up in dollar increments based on how much you are over and above the tax. Instead of it being, so like we said, there's $6 million or so over right now. So instead of being $6 million, if you're in the repeater tax, you could be as much as $12 million is what you pay out in real money. For basketball fans, I kind of always say, what do you care? You're not paying it. That's for an owner to worry about. But the reality is it matters because it's, depending on your ownership's willingness to pay it, that matters, because you got to, go in and look at it and will they, won't they, what does that look like? So how you trigger the repeater tax is you have to be a tax team in 3 of 4 years or 3 years in a row. So you really want to delay starting that clock as long as you can, because the longer you delay it, the less likely you are to become a repeater team. But once you're a repeater team, now there it is, you're there. And that's where you start to see teams like Portland in the last couple of years made a lot of moves to try and get out of the tax, to dodge it, not just paying the tax, but to not be the repeater and not start that clock. So one of the things that's been talked about with the Boston Celtics right now is, they're a tax team this year. If they could dodge it, they're going to be really expensive, assuming they can re-sign Kyrie Irving. So that's what you want to do. So you want to try to avoid that if at all possible, unless you're the Warriors and you're locking into a clear title contender, then, you pay it and you make do with what you got to do.
One of the things that we've been talking about recently is Kelly Olynyk and his contract, how he has a $1 million bonus based on incentives, and a particular incentive that he has to meet, which is playing time. He has to meet the 1,700 minute threshold. I know that when they signed a bunch of contracts a couple of years ago, there were a number of bonuses worked into a couple of those deals. Are there any others that we should be on the lookout for during the rest of the season?
I don't have the particular details, and I apologize for not being as prepared as I maybe should be, but I believe Dion Waiters has some form of bonus in there. I would have to look that up to be sure. Here's the tricky thing with the bonuses. Those are things that aren't as well publicized, and they're not as easy to get to and find out about. A lot of times you got to do some digging to get in on those. And here's the important thing to remember. All of those bonuses are figured after the season. but before the tax kind of kicks off, if you will. So it, what you end up looking at is that you use Olenek. If Olenek doesn't trip it, that's great because that takes $1 million off and you don't have to worry about it. Then the other nice thing is whatever the bonus is for. So I believe you said his is for playing time. Yeah. So let's say it's for playing time. What that'll end up doing for you going forward is it'll take Olenek's salary number down by $1 million on the future years, because how a bonus works is they're either termed likely or unlikely. And what determines if it's likely or unlikely is, did it happen the year before? If it happened the year before, it's likely. If it didn't happen, it's unlikely. So that's easy. And I know that happened with Waiters, where his salary this year, it's down at 11.5, and I believe it was originally supposed to be right around 12. So I think he's got some form of $500,000 bonus in his contract somewhere, because I'm almost positive he was supposed to be at 12, and now that number's come down a little bit.
Yeah.
I just looked it up over here because I had it somewhere. It's a $1.15 million bonus if he plays 70 games or more in the regular season. So he missed most of the regular season, most of the start of the season, so he's not hitting that.
Yeah.
So that 1.15, that's exactly what you're talking about, Keith. That's why that probably came.
Yeah, and I think it was termed unlikely going into this season, because I don't think he hit that number last year, right?
No, he missed all of last year.
He only played 30
games last year.
Yeah. Yep.
Anything else that when you're – look, obviously the salary cap stuff is like the least fun thing about this. You know, most people just want to hop onto the trade machine and you know, trade Kevin Durant to the Miami Heat. But anything else that the Heat front office should be or is likely considering here coming up into this trade deadline? It's not as simple as just trying to upgrade this roster.
Yeah, it's not. Again, like I said, they're already, you know, poised to be a tax team next year. So if you're making any kind of trades, that trade has to guarantee that it's going to make you better this year and into next season, and make you, you know, really not just a playoff team, but ideally you're more of a contender to go deep into the playoffs. If you're, you know, especially if you're taking on any kind of money, part of what, you know, caused that is, you know, you guys mentioned it. It was the, you know, Waiters and Kelly Olynyk and the James Johnson contracts. All those guys who were fantastic finds and, you know, great role players once upon a time. Then they got paid. Deservedly so, but it jumped things up. And then they also, to add on top of it, they did the right thing to retain two talented players in Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow. But those extensions, that's a combined $23 million on the books next year, so that jumps the number up. And then of course you're carrying, you know, 19 each for Tyler Johnson and Goran Dragic, and then a 27 million, you know, player option, which I would be stunned if Hassan Whiteside opted out of for next year. So I think what you're looking for here is, if I could move on from some of this year's money and dodge the tax, you know, moving Wayne Ellington just about gets you there. And Wayne Ellington, he's not really part of the rotation at all. It's been, you know, quite some time since he's played really any meaningful minutes for the Heat. If you correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I think I'm right on that.
Yeah,
and you know, so that would, you know, get you just about there. There, you know, actually, I think right there is where it gets you.
It would get you within like $100 of the luxury tax.
That's crazy. I just looked at it. Yeah, that's crazy. If you could move him and pick up a minor asset back, and you know, get some kind of, you know, I don't know, second round draft pick or something like that, why not, right? Get you out of the tax, and it's a guy you're not playing, and you pick up something small going forward. You know, hey, there it is, and maybe you do, you know, somewhat of a favor and carry some favor with an agent, with another team for something else down the line. Those are the kind of moves that you're probably more likely looking at versus any kind of big blockbuster.
And so the hard part about that is you wouldn't be able to take any salary back, and that's the key, because there's only so many teams that could absorb Wayne Ellington. And those teams are Charlotte, Denver, Detroit, OKC, Sacramento, and Washington. And those teams could absorb Ellington's contract either through cap space in the instance of Sacramento,
yep,
or through just trade exceptions, for example, Oklahoma City. But they're not doing it because they're way over the luxury tax. They're probably not going to try to pay Wayne Ellington like his contract multiplied by whatever it would to just pay more luxury tax money.
Yep.
So that's going to be an issue for Miami. So I even think like, I don't think it's as simple as just moving Wayne Ellington. You almost have to either find the right team. If maybe, you know, I don't think Sacramento would do it. I think they're trying to use their cap space to gain more assets as opposed to just absorb a Wayne Ellington, who probably wouldn't help them that much this season anyway. And then As Albert Namad of Heat Hoops pointed out, really the only team that could absorb Wayne Ellington is Denver, and that actually has a need for him. But even that, even then, finding a deal isn't that easy. And you're basically just saying, like, Denver, please take Wayne Ellington. And so now Denver's in the driver's seat saying, like, we've got all the power in trade talks, right? It's not like they're just going to start coughing up assets to get Wayne Ellington.
Yeah, and there it is. You hit the nail on the head. It's the example I've heard. I've had all these people say to me is, it's more kind of flipping it forward into the offseason. But, like, yeah, the Knicks can move Tim Hardaway Jr. He's a good player. You know, well, why are the Knicks trying to move Tim Hardaway Jr. if he's a good player? Oh, it's to free up cap space to go and chase, you know, these big free agent dreams. Well, guess what? Other teams know that too. They're not just going to say, yeah, sure, give us Tim Hardaway Jr. He's not that good of a player. You know, so that, and that's kind of the similar thing with Wayne Ellington. Even if Denver says, we'll give you our second, well, at that point, well, that's not a very good second. You're talking somewhere, you know, in the, you know, mid to late 50s, likely from the Nuggets. So you're looking at what you could look at there, though, is you look at maybe you work some form of a three-way trade, you know, where a team says, all right, you know, we'll take on, you know, Ellington. You're probably looking at the Kings mostly. Likely. It's funny. What I look at with the Heat is what they don't have is one of those guys who it's just very easy to say, yeah, that's it. Just cut that guy or dump that guy, because those guys are either good in their playing, or you're not going to do that to a Dwayne Wade or a Udonis Haslam. You know, so, you know, yeah, you could say dump Ellington for a minimum contract from somebody else and then just cut Haslam, but that's never been Miami's MO. I would find that very hard to see them doing something like that at this point for what he's meant to the franchise.
And you point out Wade and Haslam because of their minimum level contracts. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, that's the only reason why I'm one of them. Yep.
I've got one question in regards to that, because Rodney Magruder, I'm not sure what the mechanisms are here, but could you trade him into that minimum cap exception? Does he qualify for that? Could you just trade him to, say, for the Philadelphia 76ers, who could use a guy like Rodney Magruder? Could you trade him and not take anything back because his salary is basically a minimum salary?
Yeah, so unfortunately you can. And here's the challenge why is it is a minimum salary, and you're right, but he's on a three-year contract. So the minimum salary exception can only be used on 1 or 2 year contracts. Mm-hmm. So that makes it tricky to just move a guy like him. Haslam or Wade, again, we just said it's not going to happen, but you could just move them right into a team because they could absorb them via the minimum exception. Magruder, unless I'm wrong, but I'm like 99% sure I'm not, he signed a 3 year contract for the minimum, but it was not a minimum exception contract. So that makes it, you know, you can't, unfortunately, you can't do that because it's, even though it's for the minimum, it wasn't via the minimum exception, so it can't be absorbed by the minimum exception.
That sucks.
Yeah, we went deep into a, you know, cap nerd rabbit hole, which, you know,
that's what this is about.
Yeah, and I got all excited. My voice probably got high and, you know, got all fired up.
So do you think the Heat should be, like, it sounds like they need to be sellers, right? Because to go back to your point, why be mediocre? And so, you know, I think a lot of our listeners point to that offseason of 2020 or 2021 when Miami starts to get a little bit more cap space, which they don't have right now. But if that's the goal, then you don't want to be paying the luxury tax going into that. Because if you're really a salary cap player, then chances are you want to have that option to dip into the luxury tax then if you're going to, you know, go get star free agents and become a contender. That's when you want to start paying the luxury tax, like you said. Like, the Warriors are paying the luxury tax. They're happy to do so because they're winning championships. So if you're Miami, you almost want to avoid the repeater. And so there's really no point at all, even if you're just trying to compete for a playoff spot. But if really you're looking forward to that summer of 2020 or 2021, when all those free agents are going to be available or could be available, it kind of makes more sense, even more so, to get under that luxury tax. And so when the question is, are the Heat buyers or sellers? And every team is sort of asking themselves that going into the deadline. It seems like the Heat are sellers, but I could see them after selling, if that were the case. If they sell Ellington, they're able to get under the luxury tax. Maybe then they could be buyers, as long as it doesn't get them back into the luxury tax. Could you see something like that happening?
Yeah, 100% can. I think it's funny. I'm getting ready to write a piece for Yahoo on each of the teams in each conference. That is, you know, are they a buyer, a seller, neither, or both? And Miami's going to firmly fall, unless something drastically changes here in the next few days, they're going to fall in that both category, because I could see them very easily. Let's say someone says, you know what? All right, maybe Goran Dragic makes it back and we kind of like him, or we really like James Johnson. Hey, sure, you can have him. You know, let's move on this. And then it's, wow, now we got $5 million to play under the luxury tax. All right, let's go get a $4 million guy to replace what Johnson gave us in the rotation and do those kind of things, because I don't think they're too far into the year to already have had two, you know, and I'm doing air quotes so that no one can see, but good of a season to bottom out and get a great draft pick. That dream's over with. So there's no reason to completely go, you know, hog wild and just sell off everybody. But they're not quite good enough to say, you know what, let's double down. Plus the guys who you could, you know, move out, if you, you know, right now Marcus All and Mike Conley are kind of out there and that's floating around. Let's say they wanted to go get Marcus All. Well, there's not much on the roster that the Grizzlies are going to jump at unless it's guys the Heat clearly don't want to trade. You're not going to trade Josh Richardson and, you know, somebody else to say, hey, let's go get Marcus All and bring him in. Now, if Memphis for some reason says, all right, we'll take on Whiteside and, you know, throw us a pick or something like that. OK, well, maybe something like that can work. So I think the Heat are going to be one of these teams. Yeah, you could see them in the next week move a couple guys, and then in the week after that, leading up to the week of the deadline, add a couple guys just because of where it is. The other thing I want to touch on real quick is you mentioned, I'm glad you took it out a few years to the 2020 and then the 2021 season. You, again, remember that repeater tax is triggered by 3 of 4 years. If you're a cap space team, it's really hard to then also be a luxury tax team. That just doesn't generally happen because you had to get so far under to spend a lot of money that you're not then likely to go back over. But you could go back over in the next year. What's going to be, if you're looking at it in the summer of 2021, the Heat could be in a position where they've got to pay Bam Adebayo, Josh Richardson, and Justice Winslow, all potentially due for new contracts at that point. And if you're looking at that, well, yeah, if you added somebody in the summer of 2020, now you've probably got a pretty expensive roster. Now you got to look to re-sign these other guys who are hopefully rotation pieces around whoever you signed to be kind of your star lead dog in the summer of 2020. So, yeah, if you can avoid it today to really help you pay off down the line, that's what you're trying to do.
So knowing how Miami's roster is currently comprised with a number of players that are good and not necessarily great, what would you say from the outside is Miami's greatest area of need? Because that's something that I think Heat fans tend to debate almost daily. We've seen the emergence of Justice Winslow at the point position, and he seems to be handling that fairly well. You've also got Goran Dragic under contract. But if you're looking at Miami's roster from a salary cap perspective or any perspective, what do you think is Miami's greatest area of need?
Yeah, it sounds kind of silly to say it this way. I think the first thing is just get the right guys back healthy and in there, because I think Dragic would really help. Now, that's not something you can't go acquire health, you know, obviously. But if you're looking at something you can go acquire, I'd love to see. It sounds so weird to say this when Wayne Ellington's sitting there not playing. I'd love to see them get another shooter. They just played the Boston Celtics last night, is, you know, I think, right? It was yesterday, yes, yeah. Martin Luther King died. And, you know, as I watched that, I was like, no one scares me as a shooter on the perimeter on this team. You know, it's almost like it's kind of the two guys who didn't play at all, Ellington and Olynyk, are the two guys you might be a little like, all right, you got to guard them out there. You know, the other guys, if they kind of get it going, then all right, I got to get out on them. The other thing is, what I would really be looking to do, it's weird because it's not, it's addition by subtraction, get rid of Whiteside. Like, I just, at this point, I don't get it with this guy. I've seen too many games where he just doesn't, he looks like he'd rather be anywhere else. And then I watch Bam Adebayo come in, and that guy's like, I want to tear up the league and dominate it, whatever's in front of me. And all I can think, I even tweeted it during the game last night, is how long before you just say, Whiteside, go away. Go sit somewhere by. We're going to give all your minutes to Adebayo, and whatever he can't handle, we'll just throw in a Linux behind him and figure it out. So that's an addition by subtraction, because I don't know what you do with a bunch of contracts that are sitting anywhere between 10 and 20 million. Those are really kind of the trickiest things to move. My fear is they're going to pile a couple of them up and try to go get a Mike Conley. And now that all that's done is that screwed you up going down the line, because now you owe him $30 million for the next three seasons.
one of the things I'm seeing a lot today in particular is you know, the decision whether or not they should be playing guys like Ellington or Olynyk, and why Whiteside is getting as many minutes as he is. I know it's kind of hard for you to say, but are these decisions that are coming from Spoelstra, who seems to be taking a lot of the heat from the fan base, or do you think that there's some edicts? And are there edicts like this around the league from front offices telling their head coaches, you know, don't play such and such player as much as you possibly can?
Yeah, there's 100% that happens with front offices. It can happen for a couple of reasons. It can be, I'm trying to trade Ellington, don't play him because the last thing we need is for him to severely roll an ankle, and then a team's like, forget it. Okay. You know, so you've got that. Then you've also got the other side of it of, you know, hey, we got to play this guy to showcase him. We got to show, you know, what he can do. Or you can say, don't play him because we know this guy can't play anymore, but maybe everybody else doesn't know yet. You know, let's hang on to this guy and not, you know, not expose that out to the world. I think those are fewer and farther between because, you know, NBA teams are smart, right? Right. David, I know we've been in the gym a lot of times. We're in there pretty early and you see the scouts are in there. They're watching the guys who don't play, but still watching them work out and do their things. So they're, you know, getting to see that. They know, you know, who can still kind of play and who can't. The other thing that that'll sometimes come down from the front office is, you know, hey, remember with a guy like Bam Adebayo, we only think he can handle this much right now. And our investment in this guy is long term. This is a 5 to 8 to 10 year guy for us, hopefully. We don't want to throw too much at him too early. Let's, you know, continue to bring him along at the pace we're at. And that can be frustrating for, you know, Spoelstra, who may look at it and say, man, I want to play this guy because I want to win. And then you also have the component of, which I'm, it sucks and nobody likes it, but Hassan Whiteside makes $25 million. It's really, really hard to say sit $25 million on the end of the bench and tell him we'll talk to you later. Like, that's just it does factor in.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a perfect segue because that's, I think, the prominent question from a lot of Heat fans is, what can we do about Whiteside? That problem doesn't seem to be going away. Are there any realistic teams that could absorb Whiteside's contract? And what would you be taking in return? I mean, the reality, it seems, is that you would be trading a bad contract for a bad contract or worse. So are there any realistic deals that you could see play out when it comes to Hassan Whiteside? Any teams that could use somebody with his talents, whatever they might be at this point?
Yeah, you know, what I think you're looking for there is exactly what you kind of said there, is you're bringing back a bad contract, but maybe it's a bad contract for a guy who fits more. You know, fits better. I'm not saying this is anything I would do, but let's say Chandler Parsons really is healthy and he can be productive and stay healthy. That might be a better fit because that's a guy who you can throw out there on the wing. Heat don't really have a guy like that can shoot the ball and, you know, do some things from the forward position. That might make more sense. Now the biggest challenge with Whiteside is it's that $27 million player option next year. That's just kind of sitting there that, you know, he's going to pick up because chances are he might never make $27 million for the remainder of his career, sure. You know, at this point. So that becomes a real challenge, is that sitting out there. I think if they move him, it's going to have to be one of those things where it's, all right, we're taking your bad money for our bad money. Almost look at it as the Timofey Mozgov, Bismack Biyombo swap Orlando and Charlotte did. It was like, neither one of us wants this guy, but all right, hey, let's move this around because this might help us to further our goals later down the line, and let's figure it out. And now all of a sudden Biyombo starting for the Hornets and, you know, playing a bunch, and, you know, and you could have some team that says, you know, hey, get Whiteside in here and he might be the right guy. I'm just kind of scanning rosters and no one's jumping out at me. It's always important too, and I mentioned this with the whole Gasol and Connolly thing. Once you get over $20 million, that becomes a hard number to move in season, because either you're moving it for another big number, or you got to pile up 2, 3, 4 deals to get to that number. And what I always go back to is I had a general manager who told me once when I was back, you know, I was all, you know, hey, trade machine says these 4 guys for this guy works, you know, and the general manager's like, yeah, now I got to go to my coach and tell him I got you this guy, you know, let's use Marc Gasol. I got you Marc Gasol. I love Marc Gasol. Well, then the coach says, you know, who do we have to give up? And he says, I had to trade one of your starters and 3 of your bench players. And the coach is going to, you killed my rotation, man. Like, I don't like Marc Gasol that much. So that's why moving a guy like Whiteside is always easier when you get into the summer versus it is to in season. It's always easier when you're in the off season because you have a lot more flexibility how you can accomplish a deal like that.
Mm. Well, let's talk about some specific deals. Let's just try some stuff here, I guess. You mentioned Charlotte and Bismack Biyombo, and during the summer, I almost think with Biyombo being expiring next year, could you move Could you do a Whiteside for Biombo swap where Charlotte might be looking to juice their roster a little bit, saying, hey, Kemba, look, we're making some moves. We swap Biombo for Whiteside. I think even at this point, Whiteside is a more impactful player than Biombo is, even though he's set to make almost $10 million more next season. But is that something that maybe you could see Charlotte doing, understanding that it's just 1 year of $27 million, again, assuming that he opts into that player option, which he certainly will do. So a Whiteside for Biombo swap over the summer, do you think that's even in the realm of possibility?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, somewhat in the realm of possibility. I think you might have to add another smaller contract from the Charlotte side to get their money-wise matching, but that's fine. That's easy enough to pull off and figure out, you know, Dwayne Bacon or, you know, Devontae Graham or something like that. That's pretty easy. You know, I almost think, though, if I'm Kemba Walker, I'm looking at it like, are you trying to pull a fast one on me here? How much of an upgrade is this guy over Biombo? Right. And, you know, and now we took on $10 million and now we're a tax team. And, you know, and to some extent, you start looking at if Kemba Walker, my Boston accent came out there big time. If you're Kemba Walker, you look at it and you say, are we just Miami now? Like what are we doing? Now we've got all the guys with the, you know, $10 to $20 million contracts plus whatever, you know, he's gonna make up to, you know, maybe into including the max for Walker, as he's been, you know, one of the better steals there. That's almost something more where I think you do that now. If you're the Hornets and you try and, you know, it's rough because the Heat are in direct competition with Charlotte for a playoff spot. But if you could pull that off now and get that money off your books, that might be an easier thing to sell to everybody today, to say, hey, this guy really upgrades us because they're rolling out Biombo and Hernan Gomez, because who knows when Cody Zeller gets back. That might be a little easier sell of, hey, this is going to help us for the rest of this year. And then Walker might say, hey, all right, well, we made a move. Now we're a little more committed. Let's get this thing moving.
Well, two one thing that plays scenarios. Oh, I'm sorry.
No. I was going to say one of the things that kind of factors in for me as far as Whiteside's concerned is Pat Riley's pre-existing relationship with Mitch Kupchak. And it seems like Riley in particular is just one of those guys that feels comfortable making trades with only a few limited partners. I mean, I think him and Chris Wallace in Memphis and certainly Kupchak. I mean, there were a number of trades over the course of Riley's career with Miami where he's engaged in trades with the Los Angeles Lakers when Kupchak was in charge there. So I think that kind of skews in Miami's favor as far as being able to negotiate a deal with Ike. It seems like is Miami one of those teams, as far as you know, and your expertise, that is limited to just a couple of teams that they feel comfortable making deals with?
To some extent, every team is one of those teams. We just saw it with the Bulls and the Rockets, right? They just won two trades in the span of the last couple of weeks that were really to do a favor. And I think that's what you see. Teams kind of always go back to the same people. Why they do that is you cut through all the crap. There's no, hey, how are you? How are the kids? It's, hey, this is what we're looking to do. What are you looking to do? All right, let's make this happen and we go. And at this time of year, conversations need to be short, they need to be quick, and they need to be to the point. So these guys go back to the guys they know, the guys they trust, the guys who aren't going to try to put one over on them. You know, Mitch Kupchak knows if Pat Riley and crew offer Hassan Whiteside, they're not hiding some knee injury or something that nobody knows about. And, you know, he's going to show up in the out for the season. They know that they're dealing with them on the level because they've done it in the past. You know, and I think Riley, it's kind of funny. I always laugh at, you know, supposedly Pat Riley and Danny Ainge hate each other. And right. In reality, those two have come together on a couple of deals that have saved the Heat some luxury tax money. The Zoran Dragic deal a couple years ago, which is, you know, sitting out there with this, you know, old pick. Now, but it's not saying anything's going to happen there, but it again goes back to you have these guys who, it's a lot of times too, it's a you scratch my back, I scratch yours, and we figure this thing out. And if it might be one of these where Riley, you know, truly believes Whiteside can be saved and be really productive in a new change of environment, he may go to a buddy he knows, like Mitch Kupchak, to say, hey, you know, I think he can be really good for you. I know it's going to cost you some money. And they may throw in a, you know, we'll throw in a protected, you know, first or a, you know, protected second round pick or something like that to kind of balance out the extra money you're taking on. And that's why you see guys kind of going back to the same guys over and over and over again.
If Pat Riley and the Heat can't find a suitable Whiteside landing spot, and I don't mean this to turn into a podcast where all we try to do is trade us on Whiteside, but the last Whiteside scenario, is a buyout possible, almost like what we saw with Joakim Noah going into that final year? So could he pick up that player option and then he'd say, great, we're buying you out?
Yeah, they could. You don't usually see that happen, though. That would, again, that would be something that would happen next year when you can buy him. It's because with now you're talking about buying out $52+ million.
No, I mean over this year and next year. Just this summer. You play out the rest of the season.
Oh, yeah, this summer. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, you could easily see him, you know, doing that. And then you buy him out and stretch him for $9 million a year over the next 3 years. Or you can, you know, if he gives back enough, maybe the Heat are in the position to just say, screw it, we're not doing anything else with our money. Let's just eat all this cap hit at once. I always look at it as if you buy a guy out and you have no plans to use the money that you would save by stretching the contract, eat it all at once and get it over with. If you need that $9 million to avoid the luxury tax, or, you know, somehow they can create cap space, you know, 10 other things happen that get them to be a cap space team. Yeah, then you stretch the money and use the money. But if you don't need to use it, don't stretch the money, because that comes back to bite you. I mean, look at Josh Smith. We all laughed that the Pistons are still paying Josh Smith, you know, $5+ million a year, you know, for this year and next year, because they stretched him for a million years after they waived him. You know, so that's the tough thing. But yeah, I could definitely see a buyout, you know, this summer, because White, I mean, let's all be realistic. He's picking up that player option, you know, for all the reasons we said. But yeah, you could easily see them say, hey, we don't really want you, you know, let's get a buyout here and figure this out. And then that's the best for everybody, you know, because that frees him up to go somewhere where he'd rather be. It frees Miami up to, you know, do whatever they want to do with their roster around it and just move on.
And I think they would certainly, I mean, it would make more sense to just kind of swallow the whole thing right away, as opposed to dip into what your future plans are, like we talked about, summer of 2020, 2021, trying to chase those free agents. Let's get weird with the trade machine. Any ideas that you got? Any landing spots? Any partners that you could see Miami dealing with?
Yeah, so I think David probably knows this better than anybody. I tend to be, like, I always say I'm hyper-realistic with these things. I, you know, it makes me really boring, and I'm a wet blanket, and, you know, I throw cold water over everybody's, you know, fun ideas of, hey, like you said, let's get Kevin Durant on the Heat. I tend to look at it more like, where does Wayne Ellington fit? Yeah. You know, how can you make that happen? Could you move Rodney Magruder, because his number is so low, for, you know, some kind of decent asset? Because I've kind of liked Rodney Magruder going all the way back to when he was a camp guy for the Celtics.
Yeah. Could you get a late first on Magruder? I keep saying you can.
I don't think you can. It would have to be from the exact right team to get a late first. Maybe somebody like Philly.
Yeah.
You know, who could really use a guy like him on the wing, that can, you know, hold his own, you know, anywhere from 2 through, you know, or really 1 through 3, you know, can kind of defend and play a little bit bigger than his frame is at times. One guy that I've been kind of interested in looking at, especially as it seems like he's kind of fallen out of the rotation a little bit here in the season, is Kelly Olynyk. Mm-hmm. I think he's a guy who, you know, his number is pretty tradable at 12 million. Now, he does have a trade bonus in there that's going to deliver about $2 million or so, you know, add to it. So you're really looking at his numbers, really 14.5 million this year, but that's not a really tough to move number. And I think it's one of those things where teams are always looking for those bigs who can shoot. There's always shooting, and then guys who can really defend. Those are the two things that teams are always looking for at the trade deadline, and then point guard help seems to always be the other piece. So if you could move Kelly Olynyk, even if it's, again, one of those deals where you're moving him and you're taking back something that, you know, maybe fits a little bit better, or, you know, long range. I was kind of, you know, playing around. Is there something on, you know, again, he's a guy who I think could actually really kind of help Philadelphia. And if you, you know, did that and you took back, you know, Mike Muscala and, you know, did something else to kind of make the money work, you'd have to build it up. That starts to become a little bit of your challenge there, is building the money up. But that starts to be a little, you know, interesting there. It's, you know, it's kind of funny. He's a guy, there's no trade there because they can't make the money match. He's a guy Boston loves and never wanted to let go. They just, you know, had to sign Gordon Hayward. But you know, that's a guy I would kind of keep my eye on, is I think there's a handful of teams around the league who would like to have a guy like him and don't look at his contract as really being so, you know, onerous going forward.
But is it Olynyk more like just a really expensive Frank Kaminsky who's definitely available from the Charlotte Hornets? I mean, obviously,
listen.
No, it is. I realize that. Look, I love Olynyk's game. I know he's a much better player than Kaminsky is in his playmaking ability and everything else. But I mean, Kaminsky's available and significantly cheaper than Olynyk. Why wouldn't you just go after a guy like Frank the Tank?
I mean, is Kaminsky that good? You know, I think Olynyk's had moment. I mean, Olynyk won a playoff game for the Celtics. You know, at one point in time, and Kaminsky, I think maybe the only playoff games he's been to is if he paid for a ticket. So, you know, I'm not entirely sure. You know, I would go there. You know, I kind of. You know, maybe, but I look at it like what if you did something like Olynyk to Orlando for Timofey Mozgov? I think Olynyk could really help Orlando, you know, and be something there. And then you're eating the next year of Mozgov's deal, but that's fine. It's basically what Olynyk makes anyway. So, you know, and you got off that future year of Olynyk, and you're, you know, helping again. Now you help the direct competitor for one of those final playoff spots. But I guess that's where you guys probably understand it a lot better than I do. Is it super important for Miami to make the playoffs this year, or are they just kind of, all right, it's more important to make the playoffs, or is it more important to let's figure out what we got going forward? I think that's the big question you got to answer.
I don't know that there's an easy answer. From everything we've seen, we feel that the team views themselves as a playoff competitor. But then you see some conflicting decision-making from Eric Spoelstra, and you wonder whether or not the front office might have a completely different directive in mind. Nothing that they've made public. I mean, the only thing that Pat Riley said publicly is basically a confirmation of what we're talking about, that they have a roster full of good and not very great players. They obviously went after Jimmy Butler, so that kind of... You would think that they see themselves as a potential playoff team, and obviously Butler raises their ceiling significantly higher than anything that they currently can do right now. But at the same time, I would say that they see themselves as a playoff team that would love the opportunity to kind of free up cap space if they could somehow, or acquire a superstar that would get them over the hump.
Yeah, and they're in the middle of this really in this weird stretch where they had the easiest schedule in the league for the first half of the season, and now they're playing a bunch of their games on the road. Basically between like last week and the trade deadline on February 7th. And I think this stretch is going to be, they want to be a playoff team. And I think they viewed themselves as a playoff team going into the season. And even as far as, you know, New Year's Eve, they probably saw themselves as a playoff contender. But I think that this is going to force them to be a little bit more realistic. And if right now, at the time we're recording this, they're a game under 500, right? And so if they continue to drop, the next game is versus the Clippers, and then they're on the road in Cleveland and New York, and then they got a bunch of games coming up again. They got a little 3-game homestand, but then they hit the road again. I do think that they're gonna have to look in the mirror and face reality. And look, I think we go back to kind of it's not as simple as buyers, sellers, playoff team, not playoff team. It's all right, let's get under the luxury tax, and then maybe we're a little opportunistic and we're able to jump on something when the trade deadline comes around, and maybe teams get a little bit more desperate, and we're able to make a one-to-one swap that actually, you know, either upgrades the roster with a clearly superior player, or just one that fits what they need a little bit more. You're able to maybe clear this log jam in the backcourt a little bit, or even in the front court, and go get a wing score or something that they view that they need. So it's going to be interesting. But Keith, unless there's any final thoughts...
I just, as I was looking at it, there's two teams I kind of, you know, I kind of copped out and just started throwing out random Timofey Mozgov stuff for some reason with Olynyk. But, you know, if I look at it, two teams that could make sense with Miami, if you did, it would be in a move where it's, you know, all right, it's definitely taking a step back this year, but not a huge step back. You could look at a team like the San Antonio Spurs. You could do something like Olynyk and James Johnson to the Spurs for like Pau Gasol and Rudy Gay. That's an expiring contract, and then one that's only partially guaranteed. Helps clean up your books going forward. That's actually, I think, something that would really help San Antonio quite a bit. That's two good guys that, you know, I think would be rotation upgrades. Or, you know, Olynyk really seems to be a guy who could really fit on a team like the Utah Jazz, who they really kind of only play Gobert and Favors as their two bigs right now because they don't have another one. And they'd have to pile up some contracts, but it'd be contracts of guys who, again, help the Heat clear the books. It'd be, you know, eating contracts for like Ekpe Udo, Thabo Sefolosha. None of these are going to excite people, but these are guys who then Olynyk's number is not on the books next year, and you're in a better spot. Those are the kind of trades I think you're more looking at. I don't know that you're going to make a deal where people are going to be like, all right, Miami Heat, let's get fired up here. But it's one of those things where you may look back at this in 2-3 years and be like, remember when we made that trade? Man, what a good deal that was, because that got all this mess off the cap sheet.
Well, with the recent news with the Memphis Grizzlies, let's just talk about that a little bit, and then we can get out of here. But Marc Gasol, Mike Conley, Memphis, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, willing to take offers for those guys. Not to mention, they're still trying to get off the Chandler Parsons contract. So you got guys that can contribute, like Conley and Gasol, but you got a guy like Conley who's probably not contributing to the level of that contract, and that's not going to look super great in the next couple of years. And then you got a guy like Parsons where there's money that they're just really trying to get off of. Can you see the Heat? And David, you mentioned like the Heat and Chris Wallace with the Grizzlies, they'd like to talk to each other. Could you see something happening there?
You know, I really kind of could, and I think I might have said it before, is I could see them doing something where they go out and try to like say, geez, you know what we could really use is a Mike Conley type of point guard, and we trade, you know, next thing you know, you're moving, you know, a couple of contracts, like, you know, maybe again Johnson and Olynyk or something like that, or Ellington and Olynyk, and you're piling up deals to match Conley. And that probably does help you this year, but that probably gets you what? Maybe into the sixth seed, which you might be able to get anyway. And then the next thing you know is now you're looking at Conley at 32.5 and 34.5 for the next two years on your cap sheet. And then you're now all that stuff we talked about the repeater tax, that's out the window. You're definitely paying the repeater tax for sure. And then you look at like Marc Gasol, you'd like to say, all right, well, could we swing something with Whiteside? But that's going to cost you a significant asset because he actually makes more money than Gasol does. Now, you could swing the trade easy enough, but there it is. Or do you do something like, hey, all right, we're going to give you Whiteside for Gasol, but we'll also take on Parsons, but you got to take back, you know, these two contracts. And at that point, now you're, you know, as I like to always put it, now you're just rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. You know, you're not solving anything really. So it's, you know, I could see it, but it's almost one of those where it's like, I can so see the Conley thing happening. And I'm just like, don't do it. It's just not a good move.
Well, I hope this podcast ages well then, but we'll see. right. Keith, anything you want to plug? I know you mentioned you have that piece on Yahoo coming out about buyers and sellers or both. Anything else you want to plug before we let you go?
Yeah, basically what I'm working on over at Yahoo, it's all trade deadline stuff right now. So we just posted the 10 most tradable contracts in the NBA. Unfortunately, guys, I think Josh Richardson was in there. Now I always want to clarify, that doesn't mean that the team's going to trade that guy or even would trade that guy. It just means that's how good of the contract it is. They wouldn't have any problem moving it. This week we'll have the 10 least tradable contracts in the NBA. That'll be
just going to be the Heat's roster? Later.
So, you know, I don't think it was. I'd have to pull it up and look at. I don't even know if a Heat guy made the list, to be quite honest.
Look more closely then if he did.
Yeah, right. It's a lot of it though is I tend to look a little longer term as we go. But you know, and now I'm gonna open the document and look just to make sure nobody from Miami was on there. And I don't think there was. Yeah, it goes back to they don't have any super duper bad money on their list. It's just
even Tyler Johnson becomes an expiring next year.
Exactly. And that's the challenge. I tend to look for ones where it really drags out, where the guy just simply cannot play, cannot get on the floor at all, and is no good. And then buyers and sellers, that's coming out. And that's, those are the big things. Look for those as we head into the trade deadline. And then over at Real GM, I'll run another round of projected cap space coming into the summer. Miami won't be any, but it'll be, that'll come out after the trade deadline when everything resets.
All right, Keith, this was really informative. I think I learned a lot here, David. I don't know about you, but that was very beneficial for me as I continue to just spend the next 2 weeks on the trade machine. Now I know what not to do. So thanks, Keith, for jumping on. We appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Yes, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.